Jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you, jump in the line.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Harry Belafonte sure makes jumping in line sound like a lot of fun, but by and large, being stuck in a line is seen as a nuisance, an annoyance, a necessary evil.
From lines at grocery stores, tourist traps, restaurants, to stop and go traffic, to waiting on hold on the phone, a lot of us just take lining up for granted. But not our next guest. In his new book, he looks into the psychology, the history, and the mathematics behind those lines, and he finds a lot of surprises along the way.
David Andrews joins us now. He's the author of the book, Why Does the Other Line Always Move Faster? The Myths and Misery, Secrets and Psychology of Standing in Line. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, it seems like the line is something that I take for granted. Most people do, but not you. What is it that got you thinking so much and studying so much to find out what makes lines work?
Well, there's a few things. There was a fact that I grew up largely overseas in what was used to be behind the Iron Curtain in Romania. So, you know, famous for its long lines. And later on, I also went into the boot camp, and the big surprise for me with boot camp was that it wasn't this action-packed adventure, but it was just a lot of just standing and staring at the back of the head of the person in front of you. Hours of every day would be spent doing this.
I think I assume that lines are just kind of a natural thing. It's an obvious way we're wired to stand in line and wait for something. But you say, no, this is actually a pretty modern invention. So where did the modern line first come from?
Well, this is the most surprising thing to me when researching this book, was the fact that there wasn't even a concept of the line until about 1840, and it was the great English writer Thomas Carlyle who was describing the French Revolution. He looked across the channel and had these rapturous words for what he witnessed them doing over there, which is standing en queue, and queue means tail in French. So they're standing in the form of a tail, and he thought this was this miraculous thing that they were doing. And even up to the mid-century, 1850s, 1860s, you still have, like, American tourists coming over to France and marveling at this quaint little thing that they were doing. And then sometime around the end of the century, that's when people started complaining already that everybody's now standing in line and life is drained of excitement.
Well, and the problem was that this solved, I guess, you're right, was things were a little too exciting as we had bigger and bigger cities and too many people, and it sounds like it was just a mad rush to get from one place to the next, and no, it was just chaos.
Yeah, the story of how we came to be inveterate line standers is very much the story of how we started living in cities. There's accounts of, for instance, in London, of just how chaotic this is. The biggest city in the world, and people are constantly pushing, there's crowds would rise up, and sometimes riot, and at some point, you know, there's a lot of city planners who started thinking, hey, maybe there's something that we can do about this. So they started making, you know, gridded streets and having, you know, inventing queue barriers at the bank, you know, the velvet rope, and finding ways to basically direct traffic, foot traffic, that is.
And speaking of planning, you write that the place that really has advanced the science of lines to an art in some ways is Disney World. A part of it is making lines actually shorter and faster. We'll get to that. But part of it is making the line feel more pleasant, even if it's just as long. So how does a line become less annoying?
Well, this is people have been researching this for a couple of decades now about, you know, how to decrease the length of the line. But then two people in particular, Dr. Richard Larson at MIT and David Meister at Harvard, were both writing about, well, part of the problem is not the length of the lines, it's how people feel in lines. And so how can we distract them from the fact that they're waiting? And so Disney has really mastered the art of basically distracting people from the fact that they're waiting. So if you go into a Disney line, there'll be lots of entertainment in the line itself, and if the lines are too long, they'll send some, Mickey Mouse dressed, you know, person to go entertain the children, they'll do subtle things like, you know, they'll tell you how much time you can expect to wait in line, which will be slightly inflated so that when you get through the line quicker than you thought you were going to, you just feel better about the whole experience. And there's a lot of different things that go into how Disney itself, you know, they put so much thought into how their lines work. And Walt Disney himself would, you know, test them out. He would walk amongst the crowds and see how the lines work.
And, yeah, you found a surprising amount of research, not just going into Disney, but into economics of lines and engineering of lines and the mathematics of lines. People really have studied this, and it actually has an economic payoff for Disney, for phone companies, for the Internet, too.
Yeah, so there's a branch of science called Q-theory now, and it rose back when telephones were a fairly new thing. It was developed over in the Netherlands. And, you know, this is back in the days of switchboard operators, and, you know, something would happen, and everybody would try and call it once, and the lines would just get hopelessly jammed. And so the telephone company decided that, well, we need to find a way to study when it's going to be likelier that there's going to be huge swells of crowds using the phones. And so they developed the science largely involving statistics and past models of human behavior to be able to know how many switchboard operators to have on have in the workplace on a given day, on a given hour in a given day.
We're talking to David Andrews. His new book is called Why Does the Other Line Always Move Faster? Well, you write that, David, that the TV show that best captures the spirit of standing was Seinfeld. Jerry and his friends wait in line for movies, restaurants, and this is a couple decades back. Here's George waiting in line for a payphone.
The point is, I was here first.
Well, if you were here first, you'd be holding the phone.
You know, we're living in a society. We're supposed to act in a civilized way.
So how did Seinfeld capture lines so well?
Well, I suspect. Well, here's what it's a show about. You know, they're famously a show about nothing. There's so much interaction in the show happens in line, and so many episodes involve kind of the ethics of who comes, you know, first come, first serve, and you know, the famously amoral characters who try to winnow their way to the front of a given line. But and there's plenty of episodes. There's at least two or three that I can think of episodes in which, you know, the whole episode is framed around them waiting for something. So there's the famous Chinese restaurant episode that just involves them waiting to get a table. And oftentimes it ends without them getting what they came to get. So the episode ends without it. So it has kind of a very Kafka-like process where the protagonist never gets to his goal because of the wait in line.
And this tells us a lot, I think, about our psychology and about a civilization and society, as George Costanza was saying. You write about one piece of research, I think in England it was, where the grad students were supposed to intentionally cut into line and see what happened. And the students had a really hard time. They felt almost literally sick cutting into line.
Yeah, don't give the British too much credit. That was actually Stanley Milgram, famous social psychologist. And he and his grad students, yeah, they basically test to see whether people would actually let them cut in line. Mm-hmm. And it was surprising on two counts, which is most of the time people didn't think it was worth it to call them out on it. The second biggest surprise, as you said, is just how psychologically wrenching it was, how deeply internalized this first come first serve ideal was inside of them. So, you know, sweaty palms and just feeling really guilty and nervous.
Well, another weird contradiction of lines, I think, is, you know, you think Eastern Europe, or you give an example in Britain, I think, mid-20th century, you see lots of long lines. That's a sign of failure, that we've gotten something wrong. We don't have enough supply to meet demand or something like that. On the other hand, if my restaurant has lines going out the door, it's a big success. It's a hit. And you even write that in some cases, restaurants in Japan pay people to wait outside their door to generate buzz. So lines really have this double-edged meaning to us.
Yeah, and you know, we say we're standing in line as if it's one thing, but it has different social practices for different reasons. And there's definitely the practice of like hype. You know, there's these lines, or you know, for people waiting in line for weeks for Star Wars tickets, for instance. There's lots of instances where people will, you know, get in line to be seen in line, to go there with their friends, and it's a social experience that is part of the validation of having that product.
But in Eastern Europe, it was, you stood in line in the communist era because you had to get things there. But then the government would try to sell, oh, no, this is a sign of solidarity. This is a sign of our equality.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of places. I mean, the same thing happened in England during the World War II, when there's lots of rationing. And there's this kind of dual kind of feeling about standing in line where, yes, there's this, we're all doing our part, we're all waiting our turn, but then there's that other part where it's like, but this is failure, this is something that was wrong, and people's emotions hinge upon, for instance, how long they've been standing in line. So, you know, 15 minutes, I feel a lot of solidarity with everybody else, and then 3 hours later, that mood sours. And you see the same thing when Thomas Carlyle was writing about the French Revolution and the peasants who have to wait in bread lines, and the same thing happened there where, you know, at first it was all about, you know, fraternity and solidarity, and then after people were much hungrier, it very much broke down.
So when we're waiting, say, at the checkout line at the grocery store in a lanes of, you know, bumper-to-bumper traffic, does the other line, David, always move faster, or does it just always feel like it?
Well, it mostly just feels like it. It's the grass is greener on the other side. The point of the title is that our minds are not terribly good at objectively measuring things, including time, when we're kind of caught. It's kind of a line standing feels like a kind of punishment somehow, the same way that, you know, toddlers are given time out or something. And so, yes, you always, I tend to at least, always project that the other line is moving faster. It may or may not on a given basis, but my mind certainly overplays my own misery in that situation.
We'll leave it there. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That was David Andrews. He's the author of the book, Why Does the Other Line Always Move Faster? The Myths and Misery, Secrets and Psychology of Standing in Line.